In the house, let me hear your bark. Let me see your bite. Let me see your scars. You know what we about. Come see us in the yard. This is war. Don't look up for heart. Dogs in the house. Dogs in the house. Dogs in the house. Dogs in the house.
Hello and welcome to All We Hear Is Purple. We're the third or fourth most mediocre Husky football podcast on the internet. I am Andrew Berg, and I'm joined today by Mark Schaefer, back from Houston. Mark, how are you doing?
I feel content today. It's a great season. Probably not the result we wanted, but got to go to Houston. Yeah. Got to see the national championship game. Got to do a ton of cool stuff. So lots to talk about.
Yeah, some of the emotions have spiked in the last few days, but hopefully leveling off a little bit now. But let's talk about that game first. It's not every week we have a national championship game to dissect. It was a tough one. It was definitely the worst game of the year for Michael Penix in the passing attack. We can talk all day about what was it that made them out of sync and probably come up with about 1,000 different reasons. I was impressed, obviously, with Michigan's defensive front, the four-man pressure. They got pressure with a four-man rush a lot. That's different from what we saw against Arizona State, because Arizona State was getting pressure up the middle, but doing it by bringing an extra one or two linebackers on blitzes, whereas Michigan had the full complement of seven DBs back and still got pressure on Penix a lot. There were also throws he missed when he wasn't under pressure. What did you see in the stadium in terms of the passing attack and what made it seem like it just wasn't quite clicking?
I think I saw this in the stadium and back again when I was watching it before we started recording. Michigan line was confusing our line with constant pressure, like with what you said with what ASU was able to do against us. And when Mike gets rattled like that, his throws were high. I mean, and you could see it in his eyes too, where he just like, he looked nervous. I don't want to say he shied away from the moment, but the lights were definitely bright enough to give him happy feet, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And it's interesting because there have been times this year where he's played badly. And then we start talking about either the pressure of the moment or lingering injuries. But he's played very well under pressure. He played great in the Pac-12 championship game. He played even better in the Sugar Bowl. And he was, I mean, if he had lingering rib injuries, they were present in those games as well. So it's interesting. And it makes me a little bit skeptical of like how big of an impact either pressure or lingering injuries were on this performance in particular, unless it was just getting hit so many times by the defense exacerbated something that had kind of healed up.
Yeah. I think unlike in the Texas game, there wasn't any escapability for him. Like in the Texas game, he would step up, but then reset his feet and then get ready to throw again. But with this, he was just moving around constantly, and he's just not very good at doing that. They had a stat show up on the broadcast with when he doesn't move. This was like at the second quarter, he was like 5 for 5 for like 80-something yards or something like that. But then when he was pressured, he was like 0 for 6 for 0 yards. So that definitely was the game plan going in. And they executed it very well. And kudos to Mike for taking accountability in the post-game press conference. He was like, I got to be louder. I got to make sure the protections get into the offensive line. And we got to execute. We just had to execute better. And this doesn't really tarnish his legacy in my eyes.
Oh, no. No.
We just could never, like, get the backbreaker like we would against other teams earlier on in the season.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think the moment that was most true was the first drive of the second half, Because late in the first half, we did get the touchdown to Jalen McMillan after being down big early. Got the ball coming out of halftime, chance to tie it, chance to really swing the momentum. And that was where Penix got one of the linemen, I think it was Kaleppo, got, or I think it was Bulo, actually got pushed into him as he kind of fell backwards and fell on
I
his
think it was
leg.
Brailsford.
Brailsford, okay. And he was trying to throw the ball out of bounds down the sideline, and Will Johnson made an acrobatic interception where it was tipped out of his hands by Jeremy Bernard, and then he juggled it and held onto it as he went to the ground. That felt like you talked about the big momentum swinging plays. This felt like where that could have happened. Like, this is the opportunity for a big momentum swinging play, and instead, it was a mistake. It was a mistake brought on by defensive pressure. Did that feel as significant to you? That really, to me, that felt like kind of if we were going to win the game, this is where it would have started.
Yeah, and you could say that was a haymaker. And I think because there was one play, there was the interception by Mike that was returned 81 yards in the fourth quarter, where it, I think it was on a fourth down. And that was the moment where my parents and I decided, all right, pack it up, let's go.
Yeah. Yep.
And then we had to. We had to leave and I had to focus on getting back to the hotel. But then once I was into my hotel room, it was just kind of like the emotions kind of all hit me at once. And
Yeah.
just a bad way to lose a football game.
Yeah, I agree with you that it felt like the Johnson interception was kind of like the big swing in whatever win probability we had, and then the Sandra Still interception was kind of the nail in the coffin. And after that, there was really, there was nothing left to be done. I mean, it wasn't mathematically impossible, but felt unlikely. Let's talk a little bit about Dylan Johnson. He sprained his ankle on his first carry of the game. He already had a litany of other injuries. He was dealing with problems with his right foot and his right knee, and it was clear that he was hobbling the rest of the game. Probably the ankle was the thing that was freshest and most painful. He couldn't really cut. He couldn't get outside. We saw a little bit of Will Nixon and Tyboh Rogers. Neither one was very effective when they were in. Nixon had a really high-profile dropped pass that could have been a big play if he had held on to it. Should Johnson have stayed in the game here? Was it? It seemed like running back was just not, could not be a thing that would help us when he was in the game or when anyone else came in. So, what were your feelings about him trying to play through the injury?
So it seems to me that injuries only come up as excuses after bad games or characterizing players as warriors for playing through them.
Yeah.
And we as fans should have known that he was not going to be 100% after the Sugar Bowl and after his
Yeah.
just gruesome injury that he suffered when he really didn't need to, but that's a topic of discussion for another time. So we knew he wasn't going to be 100%, but there was some inkling of hope in me that, like, yeah, maybe he wasn't 100% during the Pac-12 championship game and he had over 100 yards. And then he promised his mom he would play, so maybe he would just gut it out like he did in the Pac-12 championship. That just, he just did not look the same.
No.
And I feel like at a certain point, you have to take yourself out of the game, but then we didn't really have any running backs that were in any way comparable to Blake Corum, Donovan Edwards, et al.
Oh yeah, not even in the stratosphere with them, yeah.
No, but you'd think we'd have a little bit more depth. There has to be a LeVon Coleman to the Myles Gaskin.
Yeah. Well, it's probably Cam Davis, who's also out for the year. And
Yeah.
then if we even, talked a little bit about how early in the year we saw a few different running back looks for Jeremy Bernard, who is also unavailable due to injury. I don't know if he would have played just at running back or if they would have used him, more screen passes or tried to find him in the flat to get the short passing game going. But it's just yet another option that wasn't on the table. So, and then I don't know. Will Nixon at times this year looked great, and then at other times looked not helpful at all. In this game, it just was not a game for him, and I don't know what was dictating the difference between those.
I don't know why they don't use they didn't use Daniel Ngata at running back like hardly at all. I mean, he was just in mop up and garbage time, but he was a good kick returner, so I don't know why you wouldn't throw him out there.
I was so excited when they brought him in, to the point where I didn't even really follow Johnson's recruitment because I was like, between Davis and Nada, we're set. Because I remember watching him at Arizona State and was so impressed with how explosive he was. I thought he was kind of that, kind of doing the Donovan Edwards role in our offense of come in, maybe not carry the full load of a lead running back, but you can break off a 40-yard rush every now and then. Just
Right.
never really got those chances here. I fully trust our coaching staff to make those decisions, but
Yeah, of course,
yeah, I
but
mean,
like
it tells me more about maybe I was misevaluating him at Arizona State.
at a certain point, you've got a question. I mean, you can be fully behind a coaching staff and their philosophical choices, but then if they're putting a guy in that's had so many injuries throughout the year, but he's gutted them out all the time. You have to question, like, why isn't anybody else out there, you know?
Yeah. I compared him at one point during the game to a couple of my friends to the, is it the Black Knight from Monty Python and the Holy Grail saying, I'm not dead yet. It's like everything, every limb has been chopped off. And
I'll bite your legs off.
exactly. That's basically what our running game was reduced to in the second half, was trying to
I
bite their
can't do the
legs off.
Monty Python British accents. I apologize, everybody.
No. Yeah. Speaking of rushing games, that was kind of the thing that separated the game early was Michigan breaking off three really big runs, two by Edwards and one by Corum. The defense was just gashed early when we were trying to play five linemen, and then got a lot better when we went back to our regular scheme with four linemen and the three linebackers or two linebackers plus Dylan Hampton up in the box behind them. I mean, I don't have a lot to say other than it was impressive blocking and running by Michigan. They're clearly very good at this. And then our gap discipline by our linebackers was not what it should be. And I wonder if trying to add that extra lineman created some confusing or just like unnatural looks for the linebackers. What were your thoughts on the run defense in this game, especially early on?
It was strength on strength coming in, right? So Michigan's defense and run game versus our pass offense, and maybe not our defense, but the run defense has been a weakness for the Huskies all year long. I mean, outside of Tuli, we don't really have any great run defenders, I don't think.
Yeah, I
So
wouldn't say so.
I don't know if it really surprised me that we got pushed around up front as much as we did, but it some of the runs, man, we had like a 50, we gave up like a 55 and a 62-yard run like in the first quarter alone
Yeah.
when we hadn't given up a 40-yard run all season. Just they're just very well coached and they're very good at exploiting weaknesses, which is what they did in this game.
Yeah, they are. I don't have a lot to add to that. It is it was crazy to see just like not used to seeing runs get broken off like that, or if they do, it's usually like a play is broken down and not just getting through the first level and taking off to that degree. It was super impressive. And I mean, my reaction coming out of this game was just we got beat by a team that was better today. Maybe if we played them 10 times, we would beat them three or four times, but that was not it.
And you could say that we played bad. You can say that we did not have our best game passing on offense, but they were just better than we were. Both of those things can be true.
Yes, absolutely. I want to talk a little bit about your experiences in Houston. I'm very jealous that you got to go. You tell a little bit about in the stadium, the atmosphere at NRG Stadium and the interactions with other Husky fans.
The state, you know, you read comments sometimes where like, oh, NRG Stadium's terrible. It's and stuff like that. But the stadium atmosphere inside was great. I mean, I didn't really come into contact with a lot of Husky fans because we were sitting on the Michigan side. Again, long story. But they were incredibly loud. Like I had earplugs for the entire game. I didn't take them off until we got back to our hotel. So there was that. But the events leading up to the game were some of the most fun I've had at Husky events. I got to go to Media Day on Saturday, which was in a convention center that was really nice. I got to meet a ton of the players, and I want to shout them all out right now. So, this is going to take a while. Shout out to Austin Mack, Rich Newton, ZTF. Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk, ZTF, Nate Kaleppo. I have ZTF written on there twice. Mikel Esteen, Elijah Jackson, Grady Gross, Lance Holdsclaw, Dom Hampton, Cameron Fabiculainen, and Voi Tanufi.
Nice. Very cool.
And I think my favorite moment from the media day was Grady Gross came over. He was super happy to see me. He signed my football. But then you could tell that once he started getting attention from everybody else, he was very uncomfortable with that. And I don't blame him. He's a walk-on. He's just a kicker. Kickers aren't normally the heroes, so he's probably not used to that yet. So shout out to you, Grady, and everybody else.
How about you mentioned earlier some of the hassles of getting in and out of the stadium. Do you want to talk about that? It's kind of
Oh,
interesting to hear some
geez.
of the
Yeah.
issues with even getting seated.
So, everybody, full disclosure, I'm a wheelchair user. And I think it's the NRG Stadium. They have this policy where they don't give out accessible tickets. They make you buy regular tickets and you have to exchange them. But then we had to go. My parents and I had to go around the stadium like three different times trying to find guest services people. And each time they moved us to different seats. So there was a lot of walking involved, and it was so stressful that by the time Michigan scored their first touchdown, I was ready to go home.
Yeah, that
So
doesn't make any sense
yeah,
at all.
that and plus there's the taxi situation and other stuff that I don't really want to get into because it'll be too long.
On a happier note, what were some of the most enjoyable things you did outside of the game, outside of you find any good restaurants or any places to hang out in Houston that you enjoyed?
So, we went to the Purple Rain tailgate, which was before the game for the alumni. It was very loud and I didn't really enjoy it, but they had Damon Herod there as like the special guest, and he brought out the 1991 team and they were all there. But after the event, after we had left, Damon, we kind of noticed Damon and we catch up to him and he recognized me from when I interviewed him back in August. And
Cool.
we had this big moment of, dude, I can't even believe we're here right now. And he brings over Billy Joe Hobert. So I have a picture of me with Damon Herod and Billy Joe Hobert. And that was really, really cool. And then I met Sonny Six Killer on Saturday. It's just a great time.
Yeah. Awesome all around. That's cool. Anything else you want to stories or things from Houston you want to talk about, or shall we take our break now and move on and talk a little bit about the off season coming up?
Let's get into the off season. I don't want to ruminate on us losing for too
Yeah,
much longer.
fair enough. All right, we'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to talk a few of the things coming up to look forward to in the off season. Thanks for sticking with us. First thing I want to talk about before we get into the off season itself is just having had a couple days to process the loss in the championship game, but also put it into a context. What do you think is going to be your main memory when you look back on this 2023 Husky season? Like, what do you what will be the elevator pitch version of how you remember the season?
I think I'm so content because there was anticipation for this season, and the anticipation totally paid off. Like their individual moments, Rome boxing out the Boise State DB for a touchdown, Jack Westover's three touchdowns on four catches, the 59 to 32. Just absolute beat down of Cal beating Oregon, not just one time, but twice. Getting Alex Grinch fired at USC. And Michael Penix was pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's probably the headline for me. Just thinking about Penix and the receivers, just the offense as a whole, just how
Yeah, I
exciting it
just.
was to watch them when they were clicking.
It's appointment TV, and I don't use that term lightly. Whenever that offense is on the field, you watch. But I think I'll remember it as first season I got to hang out with you guys.
Oh yeah, very cool. Yeah, happy to have you. It was, I mean, I'm gonna it's unlikely there will be a season anytime soon that has anything like this kind of feeling of magic, like all of the close wins, staying undefeated for so long, getting to the championship game and everything that goes with that. And then the way they did it was just so entertaining and so much fun to watch. It wasn't just that they were winning, is that they're winning in very fun, exciting ways.
I had this moment after we beat Texas where I was like, this is not for a program like Washington normally. This is for the
Yeah.
Georgias, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, the Michigans.
And in the last 10 years, that's what it's been. Yeah.
But you talk about a guy who can come in and take over a 4-8 team and take them to a national championship within 2 years. Are you kidding me? And this season just kind of hammered in how blessed I am to get to do this. So thank you everybody for reading my stuff and listening to this podcast.
Yeah, good attitude. Speaking of, we haven't talked a lot about Kalen DeBoer, but he deserves monumental credit for the team's turnaround and the season that they had. And now I'm terrified because there's a very significant job opening in college football. Nick Saban retired shortly before we started recording. There's not a ton
And
of.
I would like to also point out that Pete Carroll got fired from the Seahawks today.
Yeah. I mean, it is weird to think it's just like the Grim Reaper is coming for any remaining football coach over 70. They're coming for Carroll, and it seems like Belichick is getting pushed out in New England. I don't know if that's been confirmed yet, but Saban is out. I don't know. Maybe Mac Brown will be next. Who knows? But the idea that there's this job opening up, and you start making lists of like who are the most qualified college football coaches on potentially on the market. And it doesn't take long before you get to Kalen DeBoer. And he does share an agent with Nick Saban. What is your like threat level, your nerve level? DEFCON somewhere, but I don't remember if DEFCONs go one, up or down. But
So
what is your,
DEFCONs go down.
yeah. So are what DEFCON are you at for DeBoer Con?
I'm probably at a DEFCON 4, or actually, yeah, DEFCON 4, because
Okay, so not
DEFCONs go
too bad.
down. Not too bad.
Okay.
I really, 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 Troy Dandon, if you're listening to this, get that contract done. I don't want to see him to go to Alabama. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no kidding.
Alabama
Or
ruins
anywhere. I don't want him to go
everything, man.
anywhere.
I don't
I
want him
don't
to
want
go
to.
anywhere, but I especially don't want him to go to Alabama.
I mean, it's just like the timing would be exceptionally bad. Like they've really started
Yeah.
to build something good. I have no interest in trying to maintain continuity by promoting for an assistant with no head coaching experience again.
Yes.
you're not going to sell me on that experience. And I don't want to start over right now. I mean, yes, like I should be grateful that we have these two seasons in the bank and we've like really reestablished ourselves. Two seasons, I need more. Two seasons is not enough.
Yeah, dude, I need a break from hiring coaches for a while. I can't do it again.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I could see why DeBoer took his time, or his agent took his time in negotiating the extension, because as more jobs open up, there's more leverage. I do hate it when people say you can put a couple zeros on the end of that, extra zeros on the end of that contract, because you're not multiplying your salary by 10. You might add, if the numbers change, it's not at the end of the contract, it's at the beginning. You might go from like 9 to 10 or 12 to 12.5 million or whatever. He's not going from 12 to $120 million a year, or whatever, $1.2 billion a year. But yeah, I really hope that, let's take Dan Lanning. He's a perfectly good
Please
young
take
coach
Dan
with
Lanning,
SEC ties.
Alabama. You know you want to.
He's a much better recruiter, building a great program. He's proven he can hire assistants.
He's
He has
got the
history in the
SEC
SEC.
experience. He was a GA under Nick Saban. Just take him.
And if not him, Kiffin, Dabo. If Dabo's gonna adapt to the transfer portal, like he ended the season strong. Somebody you want, you have ties to the program, you should probably take one of those guys.
Take Sean Alexander. Trust me, it's gonna work.
Yeah. Promote from within, maintain some continuity. I don't even know who their coordinators are at this point. I think Kevin Steele
Take
also just retired.
Kevin Steele. He just retired, but take him.
Yeah. I think he's also in his 70s, the
Yeah.
coaching reaper is coming for everybody. We still have some draft decisions coming up. Some have already been made. Jalen McMillan, Braylon Trice, Troy Fautanu have all declared for the draft. McMillan was the only one from that list where there was even like a little bit of thought that he might return. A bit more surprising, Fatu Tuitele retired from football. He, or at least is leaving the program. It doesn't sound like he's going to be trying to play in the NFL. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but definitely thinning out our ranks up front. A couple of key decisions that we're still waiting on: Roger Rosengarten, Jabbar Muhammad, Dylan Johnson. How are you feeling so far? Any of these names really jump out to you in hearing the decisions, or ones that you're watching with bated breath?
I think Dylan Johnson and Jabbar are 50-50 as to whether they're going to go for the draft or stay another year because DJ obviously has the injury concerns. And Jabbar Muhammad, even though he plays bigger than his height, he has some height concerns from NFL GMs. So I don't think that's a knock on their football ability. That's just how the NFL scouting process works. I think there is some uncertainty there, but I think Roger will be back.
I certainly hope so. We don't have a ton of
Yeah.
experience depth on the outside part of the offensive line, and that's going to be very important next year. I worry about what the pass blocking will look like without him. I assume he'll move over to the left side. He's already got experience as a blindside pass protector, blocking for a left-handed quarterback, so he can do it on the left tackle side for a right-handed quarterback next year. Hopefully bump up his draft stock into first round territory with a great performance. Muhammad, similar thing. I just look at the defensive back depth chart, and I very much would like to keep a potential all conference cornerback there, rather than having to use the alternatives. Obviously, there's still opportunities in the transfer portal. We probably have to go find somebody else who can start there, but he was so good this year. Such a good fit for the what we're doing, with letting him kind of take somebody out of the game. Would really like to keep that going. That, I mean, I think that ties into what's left to do in the transfer portal. It seems that high school recruiting is pretty much done. We're just waiting for, hopefully Dominic Kirk's to sign his letter of intent. Hopefully not, get his head turned by Ohio State or elsewhere. What's left on the to-do list for you in the transfer portal?
The Michigan game really showed me the importance of having two or three good running backs. And I think we talked about that in the Slack after the game because a lot of these Big Ten programs, they have two or three guys that they can lean on. And Maybe going with that, we could add a little bit more size up front in the O and D lines, because as it stands right now, our defensive line, like collectively as a unit, is really small in terms of like weight. On def also on defense, maybe another linebacker, because I don't know if the guy we got from Vanderbilt, Barr, I don't know if he's going to be the anchor of the defense, but then again, I haven't watched much Vanderbilt, so I could be totally wrong about that. But yeah, as you said, another corner, preferably another all-conference corner, and I think we'll be set.
Yeah, I feel fairly confident about Tupitala and Bruner as the starting linebackers, and then you move in, Bark and kind of rotate in with them, and then some of the younger players. We had a good recruiting class at linebacker last year, so maybe we'll start
Oh
to see
yeah,
some of them.
Devin Bryant, I forgot about him.
But yeah, I think other than, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if another receiver comes in, especially if all three of our top guys are gone next year. There's definitely room for some more size in the receiver room.
Right.
We brought in Jeremiah Hunter, but other than that, we're looking at, Jeremy Bernard, Giles Jackson. They're excellent players, but they're quite small. And it'd be nice to have somebody else, in the 6 foot range, kind of like in the Jalen Polk role.
Which is why I don't know if Silas Bolden really makes much sense because he's
Yeah,
pretty small
he's an
too.
another great player, but it kind of feels a
Yeah.
little bit with redundant with what we have. I don't want to say like we're not interested in you. He's great. I would love to have another guy
Yeah,
like that,
he's a
but
really
when
good
scholarships
receiver,
are
but
super limited, you have to make tough decisions about do you need, who's going to see the most playing time and return on the investment of that scholarship. And I don't know if it's him. But I think we'll need another defensive tackle. They're hard to come by, but with Tuatelli out, Tuli is gone. Ale is graduated. We need more depth and size up front. It's going to be a problem if we are going into next season against a bunch of teams that want to run the ball 25 times, 30 times, and we just don't have depth up front, and or a breakout from somebody who's already on the roster would be great. But if we could find somebody who's already proven, that's even better. Let's get into our recommendations and plugs, Mark. I don't know if you had time to catch up on any movies, shows, books, anything, any entertainment outside of the Husky universe while you were traveling, but even restaurants in Houston, anything you want to recommend?
So Houston had this great Cajun place. Apparently, it's a chain down south. It's called Papa Deuce. I'll have
I've
to.
heard of this, yeah.
You've heard? Oh, you've heard of it? Okay, it's really good. I had fried gator there for the first time, so that was really
Nice.
good. So I would recommend it if you're in Houston.
Sounds good. I'm going to recommend a book called The Wager by David Grann, a nonfiction book about a British military, British Navy ship that shipwrecked trying to go around the southern coast of Argentina in the 17th century or the 18th century. And they were shipwrecked, marooned on an island, and how they tried to survive and then return to England. It was fascinating. It was a crazy story, and there's so many unbelievable things. And I learned a lot about like
Wow.
shipping and maritime life and things I didn't know about. One of the survivors was the grandson of the poet Lord Byron, and he kept a really detailed journal. So it's the way that they kind of profiled it from different parts of the boat, the captain, like a crew member, an officer. It was super interesting. I highly recommend it. It's like a page
Sounds
turner for a
very interesting. I want to
nonfiction
read it
book.
now.
It's not a bunch of 2023 best of lists, and that's how I found it, but definitely lived up to the name. David Grann is the author's name. I think that's it. Mark, thanks for coming on, sharing some of your experiences in Houston with us. It's been an awesome season. Our schedule going forward will kind of depend on news that's breaking. Certainly, if we find out, get any coaching news or big portal news, we'll be back to talk about it. In the meantime, it's been an awesome, awesome year. I've enjoyed talking about it with you and Coach and Gaby and Aaron, and hope we get to keep doing that coming up in the off season as well. And for now, thanks for listening, everybody, and go Dawgs.
Thank you, everybody. Go Dawgs.